Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on, of course, WGN Radio. Older dogs, they smile. Do you have one of those at home? You might find a place on a calendar. Your dog can be a celebrity. We'll also talk about the increase of leptospirosis happening in Chicago. Dr. Doug Kratt, president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. I will tell you, 2020 has been something. If it can happen, it happens in Chicago. Where I am, Dr. Kratt, there was a derecho. I never even heard that term before. That's when we had tornadoes that came into the city of Chicago. Crazy. Out on the lake, you could actually see these water spouts. Trees were falling down left and right all over the place. Winds of well over 100 miles an hour from western Iowa sweeping through, I guess, all the way to Ohio. And it was, I never even heard of that before. That's not to mention the two hurricanes that just hit, all the wildfires. No doubt floods are about to happen. Maybe frogs will rain from the sky. I don't know what's going to happen. Emergency preparedness, it seems to me, Dr. Kratt, has never been so important. And I think this is where I start. I was on the board of the American Humane Association for several years, and we really supported the idea of never, if at all possible. Now, let me rephrase that. Just never, ever leaving your house, evacuating, actually going to an evacuation center or somewhere else, a relative's house, a hotel, whatever, without your pets. Do you agree with that?
I definitely agree with that. You know, the AVMA has advocated for shelters being able to take your pets with you or have additional facilities set up where pets can be handled. You know, unfortunately, this is a timely topic, but, you know, this is a topic that it's tough when it's timely. You know, it's best to be prepared. You said emergency preparedness, and I think that's the key.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, everyone thinks it's not going to ever happen to them. And maybe the flood won't, or the tornado won't, or the hurricane won't, but it can be something else. It could be a gas line leak where you live. It can be a power outage that goes on, and you just have to leave. I mean, they aren't all terrible catastrophes. They can be very localized as well. The point is, I think you never really do know. Preparation, I think, is what's most important.
I agree, because, you know, we talk about everything you just talked about, right? So a tornado, you don't have time to get prepared to get your to get everything together at that moment, so having it prepared in advance. Floods, yeah, so there could be potential for you being able to get a kit together, because you may know the floods are coming, but I'm sure a lot of people are kind of still biding their time and seeing what's happening, and hurricanes and all of that. But I think it doesn't... Emergency preparedness for our pets doesn't have to happen at the spur of the moment. With some planning now, you can kind of have many things ready for them that you can just grab and go, and then it won't be quite as panicked potentially to grab Fluffy and Fido and head on out to safer territory.
So what do you need to have to prepare?
Well, so let's think what we need for our pets on a daily basis, right? So we need food. So I would recommend having 3 to 3 days, maybe as much as 7 days of dry food or canned food available. Ideally, canned food would be the kind that's the pop top now, so you don't have to take a can opener with you. If your pet's on medications, probably would be good to change those medications out frequently, but maybe as much as a week or a 2 week supply of medicine, you know, if it's insulin or if it's pain relievers or whatever it is. Potable water, you need it for yourself. Why not make sure you have a good water supply for your pets? We need our dish. We need some dishes and some water bowls. You know, nowadays they have nice collapsible ones. They don't take up any room. I also recommend, much like for our evacuation kits, maybe some liquid dish soap. Can use to decontaminate ourselves, but it can keep these things open. So that's just that aspect. Your first aid kit and your pet's first aid kit are probably very, very similar. So just maybe stock it a little bit heavier, and you're going to be set for your pet in most instances. Now, that's not the pain relievers, but that's bandage material, that's cotton, that's tape, that's potentially latex gloves or saline solution and tweezers and things like that. I think those are all good things. And then if it's a cat, you know, your cat needs to have a bathroom, right? So your dog, you can sometimes find a nice piece of grass and the dog will go to the bathroom, but cats typically want to be in a litter box. So if you can have a, you know, put maybe some of these supplies in a litter box so you can take it with you, and have some spare litter with it, or be able to shred some newspaper or something with it, but those would all be there. I think, and then, you know what, the one thing, Steve, that I didn't mention is maybe a binder. I was talking with Dr. Jose Arce, who's our president-elect. Mm-hmm. He lives in Puerto Rico, so this is very top-of-mind awareness for him. But identification papers for your pet, including ownership, so maybe their vaccine records can be on a binder. I would keep up-to-date photos on your phone, but, you know, if we're in a power loss or something like that, you may want to actually have printed-out photos. Also, a good emergency contact list with phone numbers so people can look in it, something happens to you, heaven forbid, they can look at it and say, okay, this is a veterinarian they normally use, this is a pharmacy they use, these are their medical records, these are things we need to be thinking about. So that would be my to-go kit. And although it sounds like a lot, you know, if you do it right, it's really not that much, and it's things that we should probably have ready for ourselves anyhow.
Yeah, really good ideas, and some of which maybe you might not have thought about before. So the air raid siren goes off because something's coming your way. And it's easy enough to get the dog. If you have a lizard in an aquarium, it's easy enough to get the lizard, I guess. But how about the cat? Because here you are, you're all stressed out, even under normal circumstances, you know, when it's time to go to the vet, maybe. Come on, understand what fear-free is about, and this won't happen to you. But it can happen if your cat is picking up on your stress, your cat isn't trained to go in the carrier, your cat sees the carrier and runs for the hills. So how important is carrier training for cats?
Oh, I think you hit it just right, because, you know, having your cat trained to go in and out of it, you know, we talk about that to go to the veterinarian, but in those stressful situations, you need to be able to pop them in the carrier fairly quickly. And, you know, not all carriers are created equal, right? There's some where you're kind of trying to take every square inch of space up to get the cat in there. But then there's also some carriers which might have a little bit more room in them. They might be able to put the cat in from the top or from the side, any number of things. But I think getting your cat comfortable with it, maybe even feeding it in occasionally so it knows that there's some good things there, give positive reinforcement training, you know, some treats when they go in their carrier. I think all of those would be great things. That way, if, and hopefully it never happens, but if there's an emergency, you can find your kitty cat and pop them in quicker, and hopefully none the worse for wear.
You know, I want to end this kind of where we began, and I think it's something that's definitely after Hurricane Katrina. I remember writing about this, and the story that I wrote received tons of national attention because I commented about this woman on the rooftop. I remember one of the dogs was a Rottweiler, and the rescuers wouldn't even take her dogs because it was a Rottweiler. They wouldn't take the dogs. And where would they take the dogs to? So at that point in time, this is Hurricane Katrina, so it wasn't yesterday, but it was recent enough. At that point in time, they were taking the animals one place, way over there, and they were taking the people over there. So you were still going to be separated, but they wouldn't. So the woman said, I am not leaving unless my dogs can come with me. And it turned out the woman died, you know. So there were many instances of that, sadly, and we saw that happen for the first time in front of our eyes on national TV. We saw the importance of the human-animal bond. And I know things have improved, Dr. Kratt, but have they really improved enough? And I'm asking a difficult question because I know to shelter people with animals can be challenging, but it doesn't mean it can't be done. And it's been shown where it is done, more people are saved, not to mention more animals.
I think we learned so many things with Katrina, and I don't you know, obviously looking backwards is one thing, but looking forward is so much more important. And I know even up in Wisconsin during those periods of time or during the floodings that we've had, we've discussed those issues of being able to evacuate their pets with them to facilities. And I think those topics, those conversations have happened. I'm sure that nothing is perfect yet. We know that, but I still think that that was a great step forward.
Well, it's a great step forward for communities and states that have actually said, we're going to do something by law. The animals have to be first rescued, and the animals have to be sheltered, if not with their people, at least in conjunction with their people. So in California and a lot of places where those fires are happening right now, people are, and it's complicated by COVID, but people are sheltered here, for example, at Del Mar Racetrack, but outside the racetrack, there's a kennel for the dogs. And of course you can do it because it's not 40 below, you know, the weather is, but there's a place for the dogs. So even if they're not inside with their people, which would have been ideal in my view, at least they are there.
And they're taken care of, and they're not left behind. So
yes.
I think that that is a huge benefit. I know California has this tragedy. Well, a lot of the states out west are having this tragedy, and they're dealing with different aspects of it. The veterinary school at UC Davis is working with it. But I agree that maybe not ideal, but it's a step. Again, we've taken a step forward.
All right. Well, you're a part of the reason for that. At least the American Veterinary Medical Association is. Dr. Kratt, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Natalie Marks is here to talk about one of her favorite topics, and that is leptospirosis. And you and I, Dr. Marks, were chit-chatting off the air about an exciting topic. Yes, we talk about leptospirosis off the air. And you mentioned a concern of yours and an observation as well about clients not being able to see their veterinarian for vaccines or not wanting to get out, maybe because of the pandemic, for whatever reason, down on vaccines a bit. And that's part of the reason, perhaps, why we are seeing, and are you seeing, first of all, more leptospirosis, and does that have anything to do with it?
Yeah, Steve, I think it could. You know, there haven't been any active studies, you know, currently in the pandemic to prove this one way or the other, but the theory makes a lot of sense. The reason we talk about this is because when dogs are not vaccinated, for leptospirosis, and remember that's a bacterial disease transmitted by rodents and other types of urban and rural wildlife, and our dogs ingest contaminated water where this urine sits with the bacteria, and they can get lots of disease in their body. It's also contagious to people. So when dogs are not vaccinated for this, what ends up happening is up to 20% of dogs can be what are called subclinical carriers. And that means that they can be walking around in your house, in your neighborhood, acting perfectly fine with no qualms about their health, at least from what the pet parent sees. But when they urinate, they could actually be shedding this bacteria, not only in the home, making it a risk for the humans living there, but also to the canine community. So urinating out this bacteria in dog parks, urinating at the dog beach and other places where another dog could drink that puddle and then become infected. So the less dogs we have vaccinated, the more risk of shedding, and actually the vaccines that are considered gold standard right now prevent urinary shedding. That's one of their claims, and it's super important to realize this because, unfortunately, when more dogs are shedding, more dogs are exposed and at risk, which in theory also places more humans at risk for leptospirosis.
And it's kind of a circle, right? So it's spread by, in urban areas like Chicago, by a lot of critters from squirrels to raccoons, but greatly by city rats. And they're out more because of the pandemic as they're looking more for more food in different places because the restaurants are closed or have limited hours and they don't have the availability to these rats that really ate at restaurants in a sense. They would go in the back alley. And this is true. Actually, it's happening all over the United States. So this in conjunction with everything you said, it seems like a vicious circle because it turns out that the more that the dog spread it, then the more the other animals in the community can get it and spread it, which means the more the dogs can get it, and it goes around and around and around. Am I right about that?
You're so right. It's sort of that hamster wheel effect that we see, and how do we stop it, right? Because you're right. The rats here are definitely having what I'm calling new traffic patterns, right? So they don't see these restaurants super busy. They don't have access to all of this garbage that they normally do, and therefore they're going into more of a kind of a brave outlook. So they're going into yards and alleyways and garages and going through dumpsters much more than they did in neighborhoods. That puts our dogs, especially dogs that stay in the backyard, more at risk. And when they're more at risk, of course, then again, we have more risk of transmission and certainly, again, the risk to human transmission. And, you know, we mentioned rats in urban areas, but for all of your listeners, I want to make sure people understand it's not just rats. So lepto can be spread from raccoons, opossums, skunks, even squirrels. And if you're in a rural setting, cows and pigs can actually be what we call reservoir hosts, or they can harbor the bacteria and then urinate that out. And dogs that go out herding, or if you're trail riding and you're taking your dog out through pastures, that can be an exposure place too. So we want to make sure that we understand all of the places that dogs can be exposed, and certainly in urban settings like ours, being the rattiest city in the U.S., that's our primary exposure.
Yeah, we're talking about Chicago, of course. So I want to use the P word, and it isn't P, it is prevention.
I think that's the perfect way to classify this disease, because the core of prevention of leptospirosis is truly vaccination strategy. There was just a study that was done in Chicago that looked at our lepto issue, because we are considered a hot spot in the U.S. because of the rats and some of the other environmental factors. And the conclusions of the study were very bold and very shocking, and I think very telling to all the pet parents out there. So dogs that are not vaccinated for leptospirosis are more than 20 times more likely to get the disease than those dogs that have completed a vaccination protocol.
All right, so right there, to me, that is incredibly compelling. I hope you consider that. Dr. Marks, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Lisa Lunkhofer, Executive Director of the Gray Muzzle Organization. The name suggests that somehow you have something to do with older dogs. Lisa, could you explain what the organization is?
We do indeed, Steve. The Gray Muzzle Organization improves the lives of at-risk senior dogs by providing funding and other resources to animal shelters and rescues and other nonprofit organizations across the country.
So here's a quiz question for all of you. Go to an animal shelter or go to a rescue online, in person, it doesn't matter. And what type of dog do you see more of? And the answer, older dogs. Why are so many dogs that are senior citizens, some downright geriatric, in animal shelters?
Yeah, it's truly sad. You know, older dogs end up in shelters for many of the reasons that younger dogs end up in shelters. But, you know, older dogs do tend to slow down. They tend to, just like the rest of us as we grow older, develop some medical issues that may need attention.
Yeah.
And sometimes, sadly, people can't afford to address those issues.
Yeah, I mean, and the sad part is, in nearly every case, the dog hasn't done anything wrong.
Exactly. That's why we are working so hard on behalf of those senior dogs who need a second chance.
All right. So one way to support the Gray Muzzle Organization is to make your dog famous. Explain what this contest is. It's called the Summer Smiles Contest.
Exactly. So we are right in the middle of our Summer Smile campaign and calendar contest. One of the really big challenges that animal welfare organizations face is paying for the care of older dogs' teeth. A lot of senior dogs come into animal shelters and rescues and they have never had dental care or haven't had dental care in a long time, and it's very costly. So our Summer Smile campaign aims to raise $20,000 for grants to animal welfare organizations to help old dogs smile again. And when you make a donation to the campaign, you can upload a photo of your favorite pup onto our campaign grid. And at the end of the campaign, we will select 11 photos to be featured in our 2021 calendar. And then our December photo will feature all of the photos on the grid. So even if you're not picked as Mr. January or February, your pup will still be in the calendar.
Well, that's cool. And you'll have a celebrity panel of judges do the judging, I am sure. I think I did the judging for you 1 or 2 years. It's hard to do because all of these dogs are wonderful dogs, you know, and they all deserve to be in the calendar. What we need are 387 months in the year, so that way all the dogs would be able to get in, but you found a way to include all the dogs. You know, and joining the calendar and participating is free, but I suppose you wouldn't mind if someone made a contribution. Where would the money go?
Exactly. All of the money that we raise will go to support dental grants for our grantees next year to ensure that senior dogs get the dental care that they need. And that can improve their quality of life in terms of being able to eat more easily and be more comfortable, but it can also really influence their overall health. So it's a really important thing, and we really encourage people to consider making a donation.
So I think we only have about a minute here. However, in that time, what are you most proud that the Gray Muzzle Organization has done?
I'm really proud of the fact that every single day we remain steadfastly committed to our mission to help senior dogs and to be a leader in calling attention to their needs and calling attention to how much love they have to give and encouraging everyone to consider opening their hearts and homes to an older dog in need.
And what's your website?
It's graymuzzle.org, GREYMUZZLE.org.
Graymuzzle.org. Lisa, thank you so much, and thank you for the work that you do to support and promote these senior dogs.
Well, thank you, Steve. We appreciate all you do, too.
At the virtual convention of the American Veterinary Medical Association, one of the speakers to close out the entire event, which I was proud to speak at, by the way, it's always an honor to speak at the convention of the American Veterinary Medical Association. I mean, after all, that's where it's at, in veterinary medicine, in my opinion, of which I do respect. Anyway, I digress. Dr. Anthony Fauci, yeah, one of the most recognizable faces, I think, on the planet right now. He spoke, and he spoke about all sorts of things. Now, remember, he's talking to veterinarians, so he didn't have to explain what the coronavirus is. I mean, veterinarians know. I mean, the small animal veterinarians deal with canine coronavirus, feline coronavirus. In fact, he talked about medications that are used for people for COVID-19, and one of the medications comes from animal health. So it comes from treating cats, actually. So a drug just like the drug we've heard about called Remdesivir that's being used to treat humans with COVID-19, a drug identical to it was first used to treat cats with feline infectious peritonitis, which is created from the feline coronavirus. The Wynn Feline Foundation, whose board I serve on, gave approval and the funding for the use of that clinical trial that demonstrated that, yes, the drug, just like Remdesivir, can help cats with feline infectious peritonitis, help them a whole lot. So why not people? And in fact, of course, that drug has now been approved for people. He concluded a shout out to the One Health approach, particularly to the audience of veterinary professionals. And he said that emerging and re-emerging infections are truly a perpetual challenge, with 70 to 75% of all new infections emerging from animal host, which is interesting. If you want to see what Dr. Fauci had to say, check out my blog at stevedale.tv. I report on it at stevedale.tv. We'll talk to you next week.